You're listening to the Friday Radio Zine. Our next guests include local writer Doug Lane, author of last week's Apocalypse. He's launching the release of his book with sponsorship from Education Without Borders and proceeds from book sales will go to Books Not Bombs Project for Katrina victims. We'll also interview the director of a film called Music Is My Life, Politics Is My Mistress, about the life of poet, singer, activist Oscar Brown Jr. It's playing tonight at the Guild Theater. Coming up at 9:50, we'll hear from documentary filmmaker Penny Lane, who is showing her film Abortion Stories this weekend in Portland. And lastly, an interview with Marjorie Kowalski-Cole, author of a new political novel called Correcting the Landscape. And this KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Awakened Media, presenting The Real Dirt on Farmer John, a film about the true story of maverick farmer John Peterson's hero's journey of life, love, death, and sweet potatoes. Opens Wednesday, February 1st at Cinema 21.
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for the Radio Zine, and with me is Portland writer Douglas Lane. He's the author of a new short story collection called Last Week's Apocalypse, published by Nightshade Books. He will be having a book launch party tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Neighborhood Cultural Center at 1819 Northwest Everett. Also on that bill will be Benjamin Barnett of the band Kind of Like Spitting.
Yeah.
And featured speakers will include Mike Hasty of Veterans for Peace and activist photographer Betty Lee. All proceeds from book sales will go to Education Without Borders, Books Not Bombs Project for Katrina victims. And Doug, welcome to KABU. Thanks for coming in today.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Now, as a start to our interview, tell us a little bit about your writing background and sort of what preceded this new collection of short stories, Last Week's Apocalypse.
Okay. I brought a list of talking points with me.
Okay.
I want to stick by that as much as I can. I'll get to your question, but I'm going to read a little bit from my talking points. And the first thing I wanted to say is that wiretapping in America is no big deal and is perfectly legal. The same is true for unannounced or so-called spontaneous body cavity searches. So if you don't have anything to hide, you shouldn't have any trouble and that shouldn't bother you. So hold still, America. Wait a minute. This isn't my talking points.
Okay.
Sorry. What was your question, though?
A little bit about your background.
Oh, I've been a writer for a while. In high school, I'm 35 now, so this is going back away. I wanted to be an actor, but I wasn't particularly good, so I decided to try to write. At the time, thinking I'd be putting the lines into people's mouths, but after a while, I started writing short stories, and I think my first short story was published when I was 18. After that, it was a long time between the first publication and the next one, and even a longer time after that to the next one. But for about the last 8 years, 7 years, I've been publishing in national magazines and literary journals. And this collection represents really that period of time, from 1999 to now, I've published about 17 short stories. These are 14 of them.
And what is it about short stories that's attractive to you?
Well, they don't take as long to write as novels, but also they give you the ability to focus in on one or two ideas, and I tend to want to do that when I'm writing, actually the same one or two ideas over and over and over again. So.
What are those same one or two ideas?
Well, you know, I just got a sneak peek at a review that's going to be coming out online. I've been reviewed a few other places, and the critics tell me that those ideas are basically about how in this society life is presented to us. And I knew this, that we're living in a media saturated society in which we adopt our persona and our lives are not as complete or as rich as we might want them to be, and there's a surface reality that keeps us in line.
Mm.
So, and that's primarily the theme of this book, I think. And maybe now that I've written about that for 7 or 8 years, I'll make the critics happy and write about how wonderful life can be on another planet or something. That's one of the big themes, and I think I fall into that, just being growing up in the 70s and 80s. That's my experience, you know. I've never not had a television set, and I've never not been pretty much a TV zombie. So this is in the short stories.
And you speak of critics. I know Publishers Weekly calls the book ambitiously postmodern.
Mm-hmm.
What, do you accept that, and what do you think that means?
I think that's a neat little catchphrase, and we'll probably put that on the back of the next book if there is one. I think that what that means is that the stories are sometimes not traditional in their narrative techniques. So, for instance, there's a short story which is presented as a questionnaire, a psychological survey, a questionnaire to measure the personality type of the reader. But it's also a short story, and that's called On a Scale of 1 to 3. So if you use non-traditional or avant-garde narrative techniques, one label that people will throw on you is postmodern, and it's not completely inaccurate, and there are people who are postmodern authors who I quite enjoy and respect. Kurt Vonnegut probably is considered a postmodern writer by some, and because of his metafictional techniques. I tend to think it's late. You know, if you want to be academic, it's probably not postmodern, but late modernist or something. But that's just because I don't want to give up meaning. So, there you go.
Okay.
I won't be too pretentious, though.
Now, not many fiction writers link up with activist groups for a book launch.
Why not?
Yeah, tell us why not.
I don't know. This is my first book launch. I've been sort of an activist for a while. I was more of one in 2001 and 2 than I am now. But it just seems to me natural for writers who are writing about the world to be engaged as either activists or citizens or people. The particular group, Education Without Borders, that I'm kind of hooked up with, and that I'm a member of that group, although not a particularly active one, is a group full of artists and writers and photographers and people who are creative. So it's not, doesn't seem to me to be at odds at all.
And how do you see what's going to happen at this event tomorrow night, at the book launching? There's a member of a band, and there's some speakers. Tell us what's going to happen there.
Well, it's just who I could gather around. Ben Barnett was kind enough to volunteer to do this when I wrote to him. The reason I even know of Ben Barnett is because in October, September, I picked up his album, Learn the Songs of Phil Oakes, which I hate to confess, I knew the name Phil Oakes, did not know his music particularly well, but it was there at the listening station at Music Millennium, and I turned it on, and it was great stuff. He does a great job interpreting Phil Oakes' music, and I bought it and took it home, and I was thinking about this book launch, but I had no idea Ben Barnett or kind of like Spitting was a local, but they were, he is, so I just thought, well, that would be a dream, I'll ask him, and he said yes, so that was nice. Mike Hasty and Betty, I've known Betty for a long time.
Betty Lee, the photographer.
And she'll be speaking I think she's going to give a 13-hour dissertation on how bad capitalism is and how the flood was really capitalism's fault. Then there's going to be, no, but she was going to speak, and she's actually quite articulate and bright, and I think she'll make some good points, and she's got some great photography she's going to show. And then Mike Hayes, who I have not met, is with Veterans for Peace, and he's a Vietnam vet, and he'll show his photography and speak. And I was just lucky enough to get these people to show their work at the launch. It'll just make everything more interesting at the launch party. The book sales are going to go to the Katrina Project, which is Education Without Borders project. The thing about Katrina is that there's so much still to do for, I mean, we lost a city. We lost more than that. And so there's, everyone's trying to do what they can. Of course, the federal government should do more and should have done more. What Education Without Borders can do is do the kind of work they always do, which is on basically literacy and education. They have a book, the Books Not Bombs project, which is ongoing, and they send books to war-torn areas, to prisoners and prisons sometimes with the Books for Prisoners. They work in coalition with them. And now we've hooked up with the Common Ground Collective, and we're going to be sending books and I think some computer equipment possibly to people in New Orleans and Mississippi. And this is just to fund that effort. So I'm donated, or got my publisher to donate, some 60 books, and the book sales will go to that project.
Okay. Great. So those ones that are sold at the event?
At the event. Mm-hmm. After that, it all goes to me. No, it goes to my publisher. Anyhow, so yeah.
Okay. So maybe we could take a story from the book that mm-hmm. you're going to read. Tell us a little bit about the background of this particular excerpt, if you would.
Okay. This is an excerpt from the novella I Read the News Today, and the novella I Read the News Today is really actually the reason this book exists. It's a novel attempt, and it shrunk. So in order to get a book, I collected all the stories together and around this novella. What I'm going to read now is an excerpt from that, about halfway through. And I'd set it up, but there's too much to set up that comes before. But I'll just say that things are not going well for the protagonist or the world, and reality is maybe not as stable as people would like or the protagonist would like. And he's coming home from his job and finds his wife sitting in front of the television set. And this was published separately from the novella as the Home Shopping Network, and I'll just read it. My wife Meredith sat perfectly still on the sofa, watching the Home Shopping Network on television. I said hello, apologized for being late, but she didn't stop watching. Meredith? I waved my hand in front of her face, and when she didn't blink, I headed to the kitchen for something to eat. Dinner was sliced apples and a microwaved cheese sandwich. I ate slowly and watched Meredith watch television. Glanced at the screen to see what was holding her so rapt. A jeweled teddy bear spun silently in a display case as an 800 number flashed on the screen. Meredith reached for the phone, groped for it. What are you doing? Are you going to buy that? This adorable item is worth over $100, but the Home Shopping Network is offering the Hallmark Sapphire Teddy Bear for only $49.99, a woman's voice explained from off screen. You couldn't possibly be about to buy that. It was mine, my wife said. They're selling my stuff, my past, she said. I need your card. I'm over my limit. The next item on the screen was a small green dress, a Girl Scout uniform. This item symbolizes both the innocence of childhood and the beginning of a lifelong process of indoctrination into the military state, the male announcer said. The Girl Scout uniform was $29.95, and Meredith reached for the phone again. Hello, she said. The item number is 2311. I waited for the next item to appear on the screen, but for a moment there was nothing, just darkness and my own reflection. Give me your card, Meredith said. I was distracted. a 10-speed bicycle appeared on the television, a small red Peugeot with rusted spokes and chipped paint. The black gripping tape hung down in large loops from the curved silver handlebars. That's my bike. But Meredith didn't see the bicycle. She saw a strawberry shortcake doll with smudged features and a broken arm. She saw a pair of roller skates that could fit over small sneakers. She saw a useless past, and she took my wallet out of my back pocket and recited my credit card number into the receiver. Are we dead? How much credit is left on this card? Meredith recited the card number again and then reached for the remote control. She turned off the television as Star Wars action figures and a Darth Vader carrying case rotated in view. They won't take your card, she said. Maybe we're dreaming? The television is dark, but I can feel it in the air, coming out of the floor. They're still broadcasting my childhood. Maybe my lost comic book collection. Maybe the junior high yearbook I lost. They had my Evel Knievel race set. Don't talk about it, Meredith said. They had my Star Wars action figures. We bought as much as we could.
You've been listening to Portland writer Douglas Lane reading from his short story collection, Last Week's Apocalypse. I read references to 1984 in relationship to your work.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a connection there with the presence of the TV in that story in 1984?
Well, not consciously. I think anytime you're writing about a society that is as totalitarian as this one can be, you're going to make references to 1984. The reason that 1984 comes up in regards to this collection is because of the first short story, which is called The 84 Regress, and which has characters in it named, I think, Winston Smith and Julia, and you know, the main character is living in what he thinks is 2001, but which in fact is still 1984, but not Orwell's 1984, my recollection of it, and the real one with Reagan and Madonna and all of that.
Mm.
Although Madonna's not in the story, but you know,
right?
So yeah.
Okay, and also when we talked, you and I talked earlier, you talked a little bit about the group, the Situationists,
right?
Some people may or may not know about, and how you feel influenced by them.
Well, I started reading about them just at the age when it would probably be a problem to read about them. I was in my early 20s, or like 20, and these guys were very radical and. In France from the late 50s to the 70s, they were Marxist revolutionary theorists and artists, and their big idea was kind of an updating of Marx, saying that in a capitalist society like ours, an industrial society, everyone is reduced to the role of spectator, and that we live in a society of spectacles, or the society of the spectacle. And their goal was to find a way to live life directly and to break from the spectacle, destroy the spectacle, revolt from the spectacle. And they created films and art, but not art for the museum, or at least that was the goal, although it's been in the museum since, and wrote theoretical books and Guy Debord and Roald Vanheim, I think. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but in any case, wrote about it. And those ideas influence me when I write fiction. But as a narrative fiction writer, I probably would be barred or thrown out of the Situationist International, because just they were not traditional artists at all.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you sort of mix and match.
Yeah, I pollute them. Okay. I pollute the situation.
Again, I'm speaking with Douglas Lane. The title of his new book is Last Week's Apocalypse. He's going to be launching this book this weekend, tomorrow, Saturday, at the Northwest Neighborhood Cultural Center at 1819 Northwest Everett. And it's going to be quite the event, with a number of speakers, and proceeds will benefit Education Without Borders, Books Not Bombs Project. In the last few minutes of this interview, is there anything that you would like to tell us about your work or this event that you think we haven't talked about or you think is important to reemphasize?
Let's see if I'll look at my talking points. I already said the thing about the wiretapping and body cavity searches being all right. Okay. Nothing comes to mind that I need people to know other than the fact that, to be crass and commercial, the book is for sale, and it has a very pretty cover. Oh, this I can say. G. Voucher, who was the illustrator for the punk band Crass, and maybe some people will know who that is, and did the cover for my book, and it's a beautiful book because of that. People will pick it up and look at it and maybe start reading and be disappointed. It's a very nice cover. For no other reason, you might want to go to www.lastweeksapocalypse.com and just take a look at that, because G. Voucher's cover from Crass is very... I couldn't have been more pleased. It's like getting Ben for the launch. It's very nice. It's good.
Great. And are you working on a new project, or is kind of just getting used to this one?
I'm very close to finishing the first draft of a novel called The Brainwash Brand. Not breaking from my theme at all. It's the first draft, and I'm going to be probably rewriting that for the rest of my life. For the next year or 6 months or so. But I hope to get that out next year, and possibly from Nightshade Books.
Doug, I want to thank you very much for coming in, talking about this, and also, connecting with Food Not Bombs.
Yep.
And let people know again, I've been speaking with Douglas Lane, new book, Last Week's Apocalypse. Launch party this weekend, tomorrow, Saturday, beginning at 7 p.m., Northwest Neighborhood Cultural Center, 1819 Northwest Everett. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.